coming up in the show.
I've changed my mind about aging rock and roll. And it happened, I can tell you when it happened. It happened in 2003 when we were on tour with the Rolling Stones.
One of Sweden's most enduring rock stars. Have a think who it is. He'll be on later.
Hello, welcome to Radio Sweden Weekly with Dave Russell and me, Ulla Engberg. Europe is facing its most serious energy crisis in decades. The conflict in the Middle East is driving up prices sharply, and the EU is warning of far-reaching consequences for the economy and energy supply. On Thursday, Sweden's Prime Minister and Finance Minister called the press conference to say that the Swedish economy will likely be significantly impacted by the conflict in the Middle East.
Our own Sujay Dutt was in Parliament and filed this report.
When the war broke out between the USA and Israel on one hand and Iran on the other, its effects on Sweden's economy were limited, said Prime Minister Ulf Kristersson and Finance Minister Elisabeth Svantesson at a joint press briefing on Thursday. But 8 weeks on and with no resolution of the conflict in sight, the effect on Sweden's economy has increased and is now substantial, the ministers explained.
People can expect that we probably will have lower growth this year. That will all countries in Europe, but around the globe also have, I guess.
That's Finance Minister Elisabeth Svantesson. The EU Commission estimates that the war, which has caused transports through the Strait of Hormuz to slow down to a trickle, is costing the EU around 5 billion kroner every day. This is due to the shrinking supplies of oil and gas, which has already affected air travel in Europe, but, says Svantesson, could also be felt into the winter in Swedish households.
So we will probably have higher energy prices, and Swedes are dependent on warming their houses, of course.
The finance minister points out that Sweden is in a better position than others to face the energy crisis. Sweden has an energy mix that makes the country less reliant on oil and gas. Also, Svantesson points out, Sweden is not as deep in debt as some other EU nations. In the longer term, Kristersson and Svantesson reiterated the government's position that all of Europe needs to be energy independent and that nuclear and hydro energy are key ingredients there. The government has already lowered taxes on petrol and diesel, despite the built-in contradiction with supplies rapidly dwindling, and that cheaper fuel is not likely to make fossil fuel emissions go down. Faced with warning signs of increased costs of living for the average Swedish household, the finance minister says,
people can know that we are definitely on their side, Swedish household side, and we are also having a fantastic public finance, so we can do more.
Sujay Dutt reporting there. So, Dave, no new measures announced at that press conference, but more a form of messaging to the public about what to expect if the conflict continues and that the government is equipped to handle it.
Yeah, the September election is fast approaching, and we saw in the previous election in 2022 how the price of petrol and diesel and the cost of living was very much an election issue with many voters. The finance minister did say yesterday that if the war drags on, fuel rationing could be a possibility. But first, the government would issue a recommendation to conserve fuel and get more people to use public transport instead of taking the car. And Elisabeth Svantesson also said that Sweden may need to increase its own energy production, such as solar, wind, hydro and nuclear power.
And one maybe more immediate concern linked to what's going on in the Middle East that a lot of people in Sweden are worried about right now is whether their summer holiday plans abroad will be scuppered because of the fuel crisis. Swedes with plans to jet off on holiday could be facing flight chaos and cancellations this summer as aviation fuel costs soar, triggered by the war in the Middle East.
Yes, airfares have already gone up since the conflict began and several airlines are cancelling flights.
Yes, German airline Lufthansa announced the cancellation of 20,000 commercial flights until October to reduce fuel costs. And we asked the aviation analyst and freelance journalist Jan Olsson if this is just the start.
It is actually only the beginning. If there is no peace, no opening of the Hormuz Strait, then it will go on like this. And even if you have peace tomorrow, open the Hormuz Strait, it will take to 3 months before the oil supply is sufficient again in Europe.
How many weeks away are we then from jet fuel shortages?
And the experts says it's 6 weeks around, but that's very imprecise because it will hit very regional, very, very local. That some airports in a country will have fuel several months, other will be out of this fuel rather soon.
And if we look a few weeks and months ahead, the holiday season will be picking up. If and when the jet fuel shortages hit, how will the airlines react in percentage terms? How many flights do you think will be cancelled?
I mean, this Lufthansa is planning very well when they took away 20,000 in one moment. Otherwise, we will see, already now we see cancellations in the shadow a bit. You cut one flight a week, you can cut once a day from 3 to 2 and so on. And they don't say so much about it, but it is already going on. And we have 3 airports in Italy that won't fuel up the ordinary way, only for ambulance flights and so on. So it is getting worse and worse every day, but still there is fuel. But when the oil is totally running out, we are, of course, in a very big crisis when a lot of planes will be grounded. And the problem is really that the airlines have not a full overview of where this will hit. So it will be a lot of last moment cancellations, rebookings.
How many days or weeks notice must the airline carriers give passengers in Sweden?
That's a tricky question, because you plan the schedules for the whole season, and that's up until the 1st of November, the traffic program. As long as we are talking fuel prices, I think they all know what they are planning to cancel. But then, of course, when you get a fuel shortage, that depends on how much notice the airline get on this subject. And that's a very tricky question legally, because is this a force majeure or not? And that is no clear answer on that.
Aviation analyst Jan Olsson. So, Dave, are you and your family flying anywhere?
Yes, typically this year. Usually we holiday in Sweden, have done for years. But this year we thought it was time to go to take a holiday in the UK. And we booked the flight tickets ages ago. But the biggest problem, actually, and the cost, more than the tickets, in fact, has been having to get British passports. Firstly, for myself, now I classed as this dual citizen and the new rules they have there, and for our 3 lads. But I guess with so much uncertainty right now, I think for those of us in Sweden who are flying somewhere on holiday this summer, it's also about, do you book and pay for stuff to do when you get there, or hold off for now but risk those activities being booked up? What about yourself? Your plans?
I bought my Interrail ticket already last year. I never plan ahead, but this time there was a sort of a rebate or lower price, so I'll be going by train. Dave Russell and Ulla Engberg with you in this latest edition of Radio Sweden Weekly. Still to come, will TikTok be a decisive factor in Sweden's general election this autumn? And Howling Pelle Almqvist, the lead singer of Swedish rock band The Hives. Now to politics. Around 500,000 young people in Sweden will be able to vote for the first time in the elections this autumn. That's the largest number since the election in 2014. And Dave, right now there's an intense battle underway for young voters, not least on TikTok.
Yeah, TikTok has emerged as a key platform for political communication ahead of the September election, especially, as you say, among young people between the ages of 18 and 21. A report out this week by the Swedish Internet Foundation shows that 48% of first-time voters today access political content on TikTok. That's more than twice the number of people 4 years ago. And the politicians, the party leaders, have moved there to attract them. Here's an example.
darling, ni vet var jag står.
Hej, Ulf här. Nu även på TikTok.
Skål och trevlig helg.
Jag ska rata snacks.
Vad länge sedan jag åt langos. Jag sätter det på 10.
And that was Ebba Busch showing what she built in her garden, Magdalena Andersson judging different food, Ulf Kristersson, Jimmy Åkesson also sharing on TikTok. Well, to discuss the use of social media and other media formats in the upcoming election, we were joined earlier today by Nils Gustafsson, a political scientist and associate professor of strategic communication at Lund University. So Nils, in the last election, Facebook was seen as an important platform for the campaigning politicians. Would you say that this one, this year, is the first proper TikTok election in Sweden?
Many people have said that this is going to be a so-called TikTok election, but I think the main thing is that we have a situation where people of different demographics and age groups are dispersed over several different platforms. So Facebook is obviously still the largest social media platform in Sweden, but it tends to have an active audience that consists of more middle-aged and older people, and the young people are on TikTok. And the first-time voters will be there, so a lot of politicians are going to concentrate their activities on TikTok this time, I think.
What do you make of what's been put up, what's being put up on TikTok by Sweden's political party leaders? Memes on, you know, food, pets, football, dancing, that sort of thing.
It is a, I often say that it is a kind of a paradox for politicians who want to reach voters, because on the one hand, they know that people are on TikTok, they're not reading newspapers, at least, you know, the first-time voters, they're not reading newspapers, they're not watching television news necessarily. They are on TikTok, so they know they need to be there. And then TikTok is a very specific platform, and it has a specific tone. It's a lot about trends, a lot about using memes, and so they're trying to adapt to that. Of course, the problem is then that a lot of voters, also very young voters, feel that maybe it's not that serious of politicians to engage in trends and challenges on TikTok. But if they only would be giving political speeches, maybe no one would listen. So it's kind of this conundrum they're in, that on the one hand, they need to adapt to the medium, but they also run the risk of coming across as unserious.
And the cringe factor here, because we're talking about middle-aged, most of them politicians, can't that also easily put off the young voters?
Yes. And like consistently when I talk to young people, I talk to my students, I talk to people who are in research projects, they say that, no, it is very cringy and it doesn't work and it's just very embarrassing for everyone involved. And yet they try to find a way to break through, because they can also not, TikTok doesn't allow sponsored political content, so you can't buy yourself political ads and just get into the feed. So you need organic spread. And the way you get organic spread is, okay, how do you do? Well, you look at what other things are on TikTok and that seem to be popular, and then you try to mimic that. And they're still trying. They did it already in the last election in 2022. But my feeling is that they're still kind of feeling their way into this to find out what will work for them.
Do you think they're using influencers, the party strategists, you know, the comms teams, that's getting influencers
yes,
in and getting advice from them?
Exactly. I mean, the Sweden Democrats in the last election worked a lot with influencers. I know that the Moderate Party are working with influencers in this election. And I mean, for one thing, it is difficult to be, people don't engage with political parties necessarily on TikTok. They engage with personalities, and the reason that influencer marketing is such a huge thing is because it allows audiences to build so-called parasocial relationships with people that they believe to be authentic, and yet they're still selling you things. It could be views or products or services or whatever, but it is also a way to kind of get away from being the the official party spokesman, and it could lend it kind of a tinge of authenticity if it comes from someone outside the party. That was why the Sweden Democrats did it the last time. That is why the Sweden Democrats, and in this election, the Social Democrats have had social media presences which do not very obviously label themselves as coming from inside the party, although they are.
Because this is, of course, the first election where Sweden's parliamentary parties can't place political ads on social media. What bearing do you think this will have?
I think there will be a lot more trial and error, because they will need to get organic spread. And it is very difficult to, if you don't pay for it, it is difficult to know how to do it in a way which gives you, because also it is important to remember that spread and views and likes do not necessarily translate into votes. You can get a lot of attention for something that people find hilarious or disconcerting or is remarkable in any other way, but it is difficult to know what kind of reaction that you will actually get from the audience. It will be difficult for all of them. In the end, will it matter that much? It's difficult to know.
Nils Gustafsson, a political scientist and associate professor of strategic communication at Lund University there. The young Swedish opera singer and soprano Kristina Nilsson has won the government's Swedish Music Export Prize for 2025, awarded at the Royal Opera House on Thursday. Here she is singing to the assembled dignitaries and journalists after receiving her award, which is given every year to Swedish artists and music creators who've contributed to successfully putting Sweden on the map and spreading a modern and positive image of the country abroad. Dave, you went to this.
Yeah, there were four huge glass chandeliers hanging over the heads of the seated audience in front of me as Christina's beautiful and powerful voice soared upwards, and I was standing against the wall safely at the back. That's where they put us journalists, and moved as I was by that voice, I kept looking up at these chandeliers, you know, in my imagination working overtime, but nothing happened, thankfully. That surname Nilsson, I'm sure you recognise, Ulla, it's threaded throughout the history of famous Swedish sopranos. First there was Kristina from Småland in the 1800s, and then came the legendary Birgit from Skåne. And the way people are talking about Kristina Nilsson, who's also from the far south of Sweden, she could very well follow in their footsteps.
They're not related, though, are they?
They're not related.
And Benjamin Dusa, the Minister for International Development, Cooperation and Foreign Trade, also awarded the government's Honorary Music Export Prize to The Hives, one of Sweden's foremost rock bands, who are still going strong after over three decades of making music.
Yes, indeed. I spoke to the band's frontman, Pelle Angvist. Pelle, you look disgustingly good for a man who's been rocking since the early 90s. What's your secret? Tell me.
Oh, start young. I think that's the only secret. But I've been doing it for a long time, but it's only because I started as a young child.
What do you think about this award? Usually honorary awards for a lifetime achievement sort of awards make you think you're going to retire, but you've been hitting the road for the last 5 years, two albums, but what do you think of this award?
I think it's pretty great. I've changed my mind about aging rock and roll. And it happened, I can tell you when it happened. It happened in 2003 when we were on tour with the Rolling Stones. And they just looked like they were having way more fun than our parents, who were the same age. So, yeah, that kind of changed my whole perspective on it. I think aging in rock and roll is awesome. For me.
And there's a bit of a nostalgia going on at the moment about the 90s and the whole concert experience, what it was like then when we went to gigs and saw the likes of you perform without mobile phones. And what do you think about live music now and how it is performing compared to the old days?
Well, in some countries, we have to kind of hammer the audience about putting away the phones a little bit. We'll let them do it for a few songs. And then, because it's sort of like we know that they're going to have a better time. That's mostly what, and we're going to have a better time. And if we're having a better time, they're having a better time. So fine, film a little bit, but you got to, like, the point is that you're experiencing it live. Like, you're not going to watch that film. Well, that usually works. And then after a while, if you get them to put the phones away, they start dancing. They start acting like normal humans at a concert. But before that, they just kind of, some of them just kind of look through the phone, through a filter, which they perceive reality always through the screen, because like the normal reality is too much. But I kind of tell them that, no, it's fine. It's sort of like being on a roller coaster. You're strapped in. You're not going to hurt yourself.
And you mentioned the Stones. I mean, what's the secret of your band's success of keeping you all together, bar, you know, just a couple leaving the band for so long?
I don't. I think we were a band for a long time before any kind of success. So I think that that means that we're in it for kind of the right reasons. Like, we're not there to make a quick buck at this point. And it's also the only thing we can do. We're very good at a very specific thing, and we have no skills to handle the rest of the world. So we're kind of stuck with it now.
And you've enjoyed some success in the last few years all over again.
Yeah. I mean, we're kind of doing better than ever, actually, which is pretty cool to like be peaking career-wise after 33 years. Like, who does that? And especially like album-wise, because I mean, a lot of rock bands can, you know, be very successful for a very long time, but it's usually like because people like the early stuff. But for us, like the last two albums are really like, they're big with the crowd. Like, those songs are the most popular ones. So that feels really cool.
And if you were just, I want to talk about the state of the music industry today. I mean, Spotify is now about celebrating 20 years. If you were a young musician starting out today, do you think you would have made it?
I think it's inescapable. In any time and place, we would have made it. But, I mean, it's just different ways of, I mean, you don't really get paid through Spotify. It's a promotional tool, and then maybe you can sell concert tickets and t-shirts and stuff, but you know, you can also kind of go around that and just sell physical product and make money if you don't want a tour. Like, I think that, you know, I know a lot of jazz musicians kind of took their stuff off of Spotify and started selling vinyl, because like one album is a billion streams or whatever the math is. So we use it as a promotional tool. It's all right. It was pretty awesome, though, when you made money off of CDs as well. It's kind of like the movie industry with, like, when they had, like, a theatrical release, it made some money, and then you release a DVD, and that made some money. So you could take bigger risks. Whereas in the music industry is now, like, the recorded music industry, it's kind of like Spotify is the only dollar in town, and you got to kind of make it work, which means people take less risks, unless it's, like, you got to search for the stuff that's under 1,000 plays to find stuff with you know, more risk.
Last question to you, Bella. Sweden exports so much music, makes billions in revenue. What's the secret? What's in the water here in Sweden?
I don't think it's the water. I think it used to be very, very solid unemployment benefits. So people could sit on their ass for 300 days and work really hard on music without starving. I think that at least our generation, that's what it was. Like, there was all these technical metal bands. Like, it takes a long time to get good at that. But now all those bands are like, you know, putting money in the Swedish government bank or whatever. So, you know, maybe, the math is for someone else to do, but that was a big part of it. You know, people talk about music schools and all this stuff, but it's also a big part that people could kind of be perceived as lazy, but they were actually working really hard on something spectacular.
Great to hear they're still going strong and more successful than ever.
Yeah, and he did say when I introduced myself for an interview that he'd heard of Radio Sweden only the day before when he was listening to a documentary about Chernobyl. And he said it was mentioned how Ukrainians at the time who had no idea about the tragedy heard about it via Radio Sweden. We were broadcasting on shortwave radio, remember that? And we also had a Russian language broadcasting group at the time.
That's pretty cool. Our claim, Radio Sweden's claim to fame. This weekend, of course, marks 40 years since the world's worst nuclear accident. And if you go onto our homepage, radiosweden.se, or access us through the Sveriges Radio app, you'll find a story we've done today about how Sweden played a pivotal role in raising the alarm to the rest of the world. Now, that's all we've got time for in this edition of Radio Sweden Weekly. Next week's program, coming out on Friday, May the 1st, will include an in-depth dive into the results of that vote in Parliament on the government and the Sweden Democrats' citizenship reforms, which takes place next week. Now, Dave, who have you got playing us out?
I'm not going to go for the opera, just in case it might damage some glass. You never know. It's got to be the Hives, hasn't it? This is from their most recent album, Forever, Forever, The Hives.
Great. Bye-bye.
Head up.